All right, so we are going to cover chapter 1, verse 9 through chapter 3, verse 5 tonight. So we're going to cover a lot of Song of Solomon. So let me just give you a review of why we would do Song of Solomon and where we're at and all that kind of stuff. Here's the thing. Like I said last week, all of us, if we live in the United States, participate in some level or are impacted by in some way this culture, which is over-sexualized. And I would say that all of us at some level and at some time have spent time drinking out of the toilet when it comes to thinking about our sexuality, right? And part of what the church's job is, part of what my job is, part of what all of our jobs is to do what Romans 12:2 says, which is to renew our minds, to speak out what's true and what's good when it comes to sexuality, relationships, all that kind of thing. Now, I know that we're all in very different places when we talk about relationships. I understand, we'll just leave it there. I know we're all in very different places from our age to our history. So I'm going to try to be very careful as I talk about all of this and try to keep that in mind. If we look at Song of Solomon simply to read an ancient text about romance and try to figure out how we can have better relationships, I guarantee you we'll all end up failing. Because even though this is a 3,000-year-old text, and it's a great text, and it's, you know, probably the best love poetry in history and all that nice good stuff, in the end, all the cool things we can glean, if we just do it behaviorally, if we're like, okay, here's the best way to have a relationship and everything will work after that, we're just going to get disappointed. And we're going to be like, eh. So as we read Song of Solomon, I want to say we need to look at it through the gospel. And very simply through the gospel. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible told me so. That gospel. That no matter where you are or what you're doing, and as you think about relationship, you have to think through the context of Jesus loves you. And Jesus loves you is more important than she loves you or he loves you as we talk about relationship. And the most important relationship as we read through Song of Solomon is your relationship with Jesus. No matter if you're not there yet or you've been in it a long time, I'm hoping that as much as you might find some interesting things about relationship, you find much more about how you, as a church and as an individual, should be responding to Jesus and what Jesus is saying to you. Last week, we talked about how in the New Testament, Paul tells us that when we look at a good, godly marriage, what we're supposed to see when we watch a husband act godly is how Jesus interacts with you and I. The way he treats his wife, the way he speaks to her, should hopefully give us some clue as to how Jesus interacts with us. And as we watch a godly woman respond to that, hopefully what we're seeing, or at least what we're learning a little bit about, is how we as a church and individuals should respond to God. So as we look at Song of Solomon, we need to do that. We need to think about it in that way. Now, this passage we're going to talk about is in some ways premarital counseling 101. So if you're married, this will be a refresher. If you're not married, hopefully this will be interesting. If you're not dating and haven't been in premarital counseling, guess what? You get to hear me do it for an hour. So that'll be fun, I hope. So what we're looking at and what we're going to read is a dream that this woman has right before, as she's daydreaming. Oh my goodness, that fan is not going to work on my notes today. This woman's kind of fantasizing about her life with her husband because the next passage is about her wedding. So what I'd like to do is jump to chapter 3, verse 1 through 5 and read them to her to you because she kind of wakes up from sort of daydreaming and talks about, this is like right before her wedding, she says, so she talks about her husband or husband-to-be. All night long in my bed, this is Song of Solomon chapter 3, I looked for the one my heart loves. I looked for him but did not find him. I will get up now and go about the city through its streets and squares. I will search for the one my heart loves. So I looked for him but did not find him. The watchman found me as they made their rounds in the city, "Have you seen the one my heart loves? Scarcely had I passed them when I found the one my heart loves. I held him and would not let him go till I had..." Oh, thank you. That's awesome. She wouldn't let him go, and she took him till I brought him to my mother's house, to the room of the one who conceived me. And then she says, the most important part, "Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until so desires." So we're going to read what she was thinking about. But at this point, she wakes up in her bed and she's very passionate about this guy. And she's starting to talk about what she's going to go do. And she's going to go find him and she's going to take him home. And she's going to take him to where, you know, she was conceived. And just as she kind of goes to make that thought full, she says, "Oh, by the way, don't arouse things that shouldn't be aroused until the time is right." So let me just say a few things. If you are under the age of 18 or a teenager or on a purple couch, here's the deal. Not to call you out a little bit. But I know, because I was in high school, that one of the things that was really fun to do is give girls hugs. So let me give you like a rule on bringing some things up that shouldn't be brought up. If you can count to two and you're still hugging a girl, you need to let go. All right? Because you don't want to arouse things that shouldn't be aroused. So remember that the next time a girl's hugging you, that your pastor said count to two. Okay? One, two, let go. That's how it works. But here's another thing. Kissing. All right? Kissing, we've already learned that, like, here's the deal. If you're dating, I would suggest, you know, there are a lot of different things, and there's no, like, biblical thing on this, but I would say get engaged before you start really kissing. Because, honestly, like, from what we've figured out about this woman already, like, kissing brings up a lot of stuff. And you don't want to bring up a lot of stuff unless you're going to bring up a lot of stuff for a lifetime. So, you know, think about who you're kissing and why you're kissing them. Don't arouse things before you should. So, let's jump into the story. Let's go backwards a little bit. What we know so far is in chapter 1, this woman starts talking about how much she desires this guy, but on top of that, she starts talking about her own self-image. And she talks about what she says about herself. She says, "I'm black, and I'm lovely, but I'm dark, and I don't fit in. I don't fit in the culture. And I don't fit, because all the women who are rich and wealthy and expected to be kind of pretty, they're all pale and plump, and I'm kind of tough, muscular, my skin's kind of weathered, right? I haven't had a time to take care of myself because Dad wasn't around and my brothers weren't very nice." That's what she said so far. I've grown up in this culture, and I'm going to be 38 years old tomorrow, and when I look around, I don't even think at this point at 38 I feel comfortable with my own self-image. Like, I'm okay with who I am when I look at the culture around me. And I'm a guy. And I still live in a pretty masculine culture, right? I still live in one that's ruled by men at some level. And I don't feel okay with myself. So I know, as I watch my daughter and I listen to young women in my office, that women, for the most part, are not comfortable with their self-image. I know you guys struggle with it and wrestle with it, and the culture and Satan continually push out against you. And even if you have a lot of confidence about who you are inside and out, you still are like this girl at some level, struggling with your own identity. So, somebody's got my clicker, because this is important. This guy, in verse 9, is about to try to alleviate some of her stuff. So, our culture knows that men have trouble alleviating women's feelings about themselves and explaining how they feel about them. So I thought I'd show you a beer commercial to kind of illustrate my point. So if someone would hit play, you got to hit play. So you got to click back, push the button. Just push the button. Button on the mouse. There we go. You might want to check the volume.
I love this Miller Lite aluminum pint.
Really? Why do you love it?
I love its wider mouth. I love its resealable cap. I love that it's a pint. I love that great Pilsner taste.
Okay. Why do you love me?
When we go out, and then I like what you're doing with this. And I love all your teeth. The aluminum pint from Miller Lite.
I love
just
all
one
your
more way to box. Love the taste of your beer. Taste greatness. Why do you love me?
You're my soulmate.
Ditto.
I like what you're doing with this. I like your teeth. I like how we go out. Guys are not good at talking about why they like their wives, why they like their girlfriends, why they like their fiancés. I'm hoping that this young man can give us some clues. So let's read to what he says. He says in verse 9, chapter 1, I liken you, my darling, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariot horses. Your cheeks are beautiful with earrings, your neck with strings of jewels. We will make your earrings of gold studded with silver. Now, if your wife or fiance or girlfriend's okay with being called a horse, you need to make sure first before you ask, before you say that. But now here's the thing. For him, this is a big compliment because what he's saying is, you are like a mare released into a stall with a bunch of stallions. Well, if you've ever known anything about horses, they go crazy. So he's saying, relax. There's a lot of guys who like you, and they're kind of crazy about you. But not only that, when he's talking about Pharaoh and chariots, and mares, like a fine mare is made better by a good bridle and a good saddle, and it's a prized possession, a mare is. And so the Pharaoh put these beautiful reins on them and a beautiful tack and all that kind of stuff. And what he's saying is, not only are you just this amazing woman, but you're even made more amazing when you've got all this shimmery stuff. And so I'm going to make you more shimmery stuff because I'm a guy and that's basically what I can do. I can make stuff for you. So if someone would click for me, what I would say is that the power of words are what transform women's lives and daughters' lives. So if you're a guy, what I would suggest is to talk to your friends about why you love your wife or fiance. Tell them, practice with them, so they can say, nah, the teeth thing, that's probably not a good thing to tell her. Well, one of the best compliments, I think, and women are all different, but when another woman compliments your wife on something she's wearing, and she can say, yeah, I like it too, my husband picked it out for me, it says that you are concerned and care about the way she looks and all that kind of stuff. So your words have power, and every woman likes your words differently. So I'm not going to give you the universal way of telling your wife, but use your words and don't use her teeth as an example. But here's the thing about fathers and daughters. I think sitting in lots of counseling sessions and talking to lots of women, over and over again what I hear is dad was completely absent or dad didn't ever tell me anything about myself. And so if you have a daughter, I would say speak to her about who she is. Talk to her about who she is. And when she starts going through puberty, don't get really uncomfortable and back away. That's the time you need to actually step it up. Now, I don't have a girl in there, so I can't give you any advice about that, but I can tell you a little story about Ashton and I, and because I think it illustrates it pretty well. My daughter has a really sensitive scalp. Okay, she hates her hair combed, and she cries profusely. So this week, she took a shower, and she came in the room, she had her hair pulled back in, a ponytail, and I could tell she hadn't combed it, and I said, hon, are you going to comb your hair? And she's like, no, it hurts. It even hurts worse when it's wet. And I said, well, you need to go comb it. So from my room to the bathroom, it's like, she hasn't even gotten her hair combed yet, and she's already crying about it. And she gets her comb, and she comes in, and she hands it to me, and I'm like, I go into the bathroom, and I figured this out with Ashton. If I just ask her a bunch of questions and I'm combing her hair, she'll, like, forget that it actually hurts. So I'm asking all these questions, and halfway through she says, you're really curious today, Dad. And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to get through your hair. So, by the time I got finished, I braided it for her, and I put all these little bobby pins in it, and she was laughing, and she ran out and went and got these clips that Tamaki had and given her, and she put them in her hair, and she came back, and she was laughing and asking me what I thought. Like, she completely transformed. Not because I was saying she was beautiful, but I was saying, you're important. You're important for me to kind of dote on. And it changed how she felt about herself. And so I would say, dads, dote on your daughters. Talk to them so that when they do start engaging boys, they have a standard, and it's dad. And if they can't live up to dad, then they'll give that guy a boot. out the door because they know what real love is and they know what it means to be taken care of. So, first thing is the power of words. Use your words, men, gently. Next slide. Okay, so after he's spoken to her, she must be relieved. And this whole thing is kind of moving to them on a date. So they're headed to a date. So verse 12 says, "While the king was at his table, my perfume spread its fragrance. My beloved to me is a satchel of myrrh resting between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossom from the vineyard of En-Gedi." Point number two, that's actually an actual picture of En-Gedi. If you know anything about En-Gedi, it's where David hid out from Saul. It's a gigantic cave system, and it has this beautiful pool. At the time of Solomon, it most likely was the center of spice and flowers and all that kind of stuff, and where you got your perfumes. What strikes me here about this, and the second point is, that you have to begin, guys and girls, creating a space of En-Gedi in your relationship. En-Gedi means peace. The other thing that I like that she's talking about here is basically what they're doing is they're eating out in the grass, they're having a picnic, and they're reclining together, and they're feeding each other strawberries, I suppose, who knows, and they're having a good time together, and she's talking about how royal it is, but most likely grass is shoving in her back, and you know, and he's kind of leaning up against her, and his head is big and heavy, and you know, so, and yet she's talking about how romantic this is and how kingly it is, and how he smells really good close up to her. And so what I would say is that the second idea for you guys is, if you're married or if you're dating, you need to begin to create a space of peace in your relationship. Let me give you some examples. When I got married, Mark Bryans was my pastor, and he did our premarital counseling. I really love Mark. Gave me a lot of stuff in my life. But what he told us in our premarital counseling was, I'm not going to marry you unless you promise to have a date night every week. So that's why I have a date night every week, because I promised that I would. So that's why we do it. There's other reasons. But his point to me was, you need to begin to create a place of peace in your life with you and your wife. You need to be able to escape from everything. When she's talking, she's saying about this place, this flower is what women used for underarm deodorant in the ancient times. So she's saying, you smell like my underarm deodorant, I mean, right? But she's saying that's really good. There's something sweet about how you smell. And I think that's connected in some ways to going out on dates and dating and creating this kind of place of peace. So you might say to me, Eric, well, we don't have any money, and we got 5 kids, and we don't know how to do that. Well, I would suggest, dating does not require money, and it doesn't require you to leave your house. So if you don't have any kids, I would say, and you're broke, then when we were broke, Sue and I would go get in our car, drive to Dunkin' Donuts, buy a donut, split it, and split a cup of coffee. It cost us $2.50. And that was our date, and we parked the car because we couldn't drive it, because it cost too much money. And we had a date. But we sat there for 3 hours in the car eating a half a donut and talking to each other and catching up. If you have kids, when they all go to bed, light some candles, buy some cheap plastic wine. Yeah, your pastor's, you know, promoting wine drinking. Pour it in a little glass if you can and sit and just relax, talk about your day. Create a space where the two of you can communicate about life apart from your kids, apart from work, apart from things. Guys, I would say that in a lot of ways, that is in your ballpark. Now, if you already have a regular date night, I suspect what happens is you fall into a rut. And so you're either going and seeing movies all the time, or just eating, and only seeing a movie, and you're not having a lot of talking time. Make sure your date has a lot of talking time. There's a lot of, you know, defragging for your computer people, right, of the relationship, getting all the files readjusted and put in the right place. So point number two is create a date night. It should be royal. You want your wife to talk about your date nights as something that's kind of grand and beyond what it really is. Make the donut and the cup of coffee something a lot bigger than a donut and a cup of coffee, right? So point number two, Peace and Getty. Peace and Getty date nights, all that nice stuff. Point number three, you know, flick the slide. Wow. Verse 15. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful your eyes are, doves. Now she talks. How handsome you are, my beloved. Oh, how charming. And our bed is verdant. Literally, it's our bed is green. She's talking about the grass. And he says, the beams of our house are cedars, our rafters are firs. When Sue and I go out on dates, well, first off, let me say the reason I have wow here is because I read one commentator and he said this little section basically in Hebrew means wow. That's just what it means. And in the sense of these two people have kind of lost it. They're sitting there, they're eating, they're on date, and they've kind of just started daydreaming. And he's like, oh, your eyes look like a beautiful bird. She's like, oh, I like you too. And then they start talking about their house. They're kind of lost it. They're off daydreaming. That happens if you have a good date. I don't know if you know this, but for most, I think most of you know this. I live in a community house. 2,700 square feet, 9 people. 5 adults, 4 children. So it's kind of like living in a studio with a shared kitchen and a shared living room. So Sue and I will often find ourselves on dates remodeling our bedroom and talking about how beautiful it is that our ceiling is vaulted and that we have a bed up above the bathroom. How would we do that? And then we're at Home Depot measuring hot tubs that cost $1,000 and we can't afford, and we're putting them in there and we kind of lose it. And we've remodeled our little bedroom. You know, I think it's like a 10 by 14. 100 times, and we laugh, and then we get back and like, wow, look at the water stains up there. We should do something about that someday, huh? Right? It's from the hot tub, yes, because we had it installed in the attic. It's a problem. But here's the thing: if you go out on dates, if you begin to create some peaceful spaces in your relationship, if you do it intentionally, you will enter into times where you kind of lose it with each other. You're like in some weird daydream. And that's what's happened to these two, is they're on a date, they're having fun, and they've kind of just started chatting about stuff. But then she comes down to earth, and she says, I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. He's pretty quick. He says, like a lily among thorns is my darling among the young women. Here's what this dialogue is. She says, after their daydreaming, she kind of like, whoa. She says, you know what? I'm just a common lily. Because these lilies that she's talking about are just like all over the field. They all look the same. And he's like, no. You're one of those lilies amongst a bunch of thorns. So, this is what at least I got from this passage. If you're married, or the woman that you're going to marry needs to be your standard of beauty. What he's saying, and she's saying, I'm not that beautiful. He's saying, no, you're so beautiful that all the other women look like broken thorns that poke me, right? So what I would say to you guys, husbands, fiancés, people dating, people thinking that someday they might marry somebody, that woman has to be your standard of beauty. For me, that's a discipline I have to practice. So what I have to say is, I meet all of you women who are lovely and beautiful, I say, you are all ugly to me in comparison to my wife. Because my wife is the standard of beauty, and therefore, you're all ugly. I'm sorry. This is the way it is. Now, the reality is you're both all gorgeous women, but my wife is the standard of beauty, and so for me to really understand that and treasure it, I have to keep saying, this is what I say is beautiful. And I declare that, and I tell her that. So, guys, A, you need to remember that. Because what happens is we live in this culture where there's constant comparisons. I was watching a movie in a movie theater, and we got there early, and what they had was this woman, two women from Hollywood, wearing two different dresses, and then you had to choose which one looked better. And, you know, and then in your mind. And that's the whole thing. And it was kind of interesting the way they did it, just for a side social commentary. It was always a black African-American woman and a white woman. And I was trying to figure that out. I didn't understand what they were doing with that. And then the way they dressed them is they put the wrong outfits on, you know, that didn't seem like they complimented them, and then they put them up and made you decide. I don't know what they were trying to do. But that's our culture, constant comparison. This woman, this guy. And so we live in that culture. And so when I say my wife is a standard of beauty, I don't compare her anymore. This is it. This is what's beautiful. There isn't any more trying to decide what's beautiful or what's not. Or, but here's the other thing, just to jump back or to just randomly go off, whatever. Guys, to go back to the power of words, because I forgot to say this, but I want to say this. It's not just husbands and boyfriends and fiancés. The reality is all these women here are your sisters. And your job is to provide a safe space with your words for them and the way that you think about women in culture and how you approach them. And so, that was just a side note that I've forgotten to say, and I want to make sure I said it. So, you can click the slide. Alrighty. Verse 3 of chapter 2. Let me read it to you, and then I'll comment on it. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest, this is the woman speaking, is my beloved among the young men. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. Let him lead me to the banquet hall, and let his banner over me be love. Strengthen me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. His left arm is under my head, and his right arm embraces me. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by gazelles and by the does of the field. Do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. So apparently to this woman, her husband is a fruit salad, but her husband-to-be. Okay. This is one of the most tricky passages in the Song of Solomon. So here's how I'm going to say it. What she's talking about is sex, and she's talking about everything that you can possibly think about in sex, and that's all I'm going to say. If you have any questions about what can happen in sex, I'd be more than happy to talk to you about it afterwards. Okay? And I'll answer any of your questions. But there's a couple important things in here, and this picture here that I put up is actually a picture of a woman with a banner floating over her. And there's just a few things that I want to make note of here. The first thing is that what she says about her husband-to-be is that amongst all these trees, he's like an apple tree. He's like a sweet fruit. And then she begins to talk about what it is that she desires about him, and she goes down and says that she wants her love, the sexuality that they have, to have him be the banner over her. And this is an important idea because what it is in combat, when soldiers are fighting and they get separated, in ancient times, the leader would pull up a flag and everyone would fight to the flag and then they could defend each other. It was a place of safety. And so what she's saying is, our love together is a place of safety. It's a good place. Our sexuality, our relationship is safe. And I want that. So women, here's something I would tell you, and mostly wives, but if you're thinking about getting married or you hope to be someday, that will work too. Men need to know that they're satisfying to you. They need to know that what they offer, both sexually, emotionally, spiritually, they need to know what it is that's good about them. Because a lot of times, we just don't tell them. And we don't know how to tell them. And yet, so use some imagery, use metaphor. If you got to tell him, you know, when you say these things, it's like a fruit salad to me, and I love fruit. However you need to say it, he needs to hear it. And let me tell you that this is not necessarily true universally, but men need to know that you really do long for them and desire them sexually. What in the world is that noise? The only feedback it would be is coming off the bass. That's interesting. Okay, well, turn it off and I'll yell real loud. That's annoying. There you go. Ah, that's nice. We'll do it later. That's not a big deal. So, anyway, women, that's something to need to know. I'm going to flip the slide. Oh, very cute. Let me read to you, because this is, the date is over. This is a little bit in the future. So we need to, the woman is speaking. She says, "Listen, my beloved, look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, here he stands behind a wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. My beloved spoke and said to me, 'Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. See, the winter is past. The rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on earth. The season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. The fig trees form its early fruit. The blossom vines spread their fragrance. Arise, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me.'" He's saying, he's like, come to her house. He's standing on one side of the wall, and he's like, "Hey, let's go out. Winter's over. Everything's beautiful. Let's go hiking. Let's go up to the pools. Let's do this. Let's do that." He's like a little four-year-old excited because, you know, they've been inside all day, and he wants, or all month, all summer, winter, I mean. He's excited, like my four-year-old, and he's really hyper. And he says, "Let's go, let's go, let's go." And she's not saying anything, probably because he's annoying. And verse 14, it says, "My dove," and he's speaking, "is the cleft of the rock and the hiding place on the mountainside. Show me your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom." I don't know what's going on. A lot of commentators disagree as to what's happening here. The way I've always read this is they still really like each other, but something's happened in the relationship where she's unwilling to talk to him. And he really wants to go do something, and she's like, "No, no, no." And so what he says is, "Hey, you need to kill these little foxes," even though they're really cute, "that are ruining our relationship, that have come between us." When Susan and I, the first time I got mad at Susan was when she broke up with me, which is a good time to get mad at her. And it was good for me that she broke up. But I was so mad. She was afraid of me. I was so mad. I was like irritated that she would have broken up with me. But now that I look back at that, I mean, the reason she broke up with me is because I had no direction. I didn't know what I was doing. I was kind of just letting the world come to me. I didn't know where I was going. And so she broke up with me. And part of that reason was, too, she wasn't really feeling like she wanted to disclose things to me. And there was like just issues in our relationship that way, and the way we would talk and engage each other. And as I look back, I say, you know what? We just allowed a lot of foxes in our relationship. And what I would say a fox is a character issue in your life that causes trouble with your husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend. They're like, it's something that you're just kind of allowing to trample your life, and it impacts the other person. And what he's saying is, there are issues in your life, and maybe his, that you need to deal with so it doesn't ruin this love that we have. So I guess the question I would ask you, first I'm going to ask you married people, and then we'll ask this of single people a little later, but what is it, are there things in your life that are impacting, things you're not dealing with, that are impacting your wife or your husband? Let me even ask a better question, I think. Wives and husbands, are there things in your spouse's lives that they're not dealing with that's impacting you? Your assignment tonight, if that's true, is to gently and softly say, "Hey, I think maybe there's some foxes we need to deal with in our relationship." So I want you to think about it. There are some character issues, things, some sin that you aren't dealing with. I mean, it could be your selfishness, you watch too much TV, you're too obsessed with clothes, your shoes, you're angry. I mean, foxes can be anything, and foxes are sneaky and hard to kill, so it takes some discipline, and it takes two people to do it. So, question is, what are the foxes in your relationship? Are there things? Are there issues in your life you need to deal with? that are impacting your relationship. Have that talk with your wife and your husband this week. Verse 16, she responds, "My beloved is mine and I am his. He browses among the lilies until day breaks and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or like a young stag on the rugged hills." It seems as if what she says here is maybe one of the foxes is her sense of commitment to him. And so she kind of renews that, and as soon as she renews that commitment, the language becomes really sexual. Which this idea of commitment and dealing with that kind of brings forward this passion. Here's what I would say, and you can click the slides, I think. Here's what I'd say about commitment. One of the things that Sue and I try to do, and I'm not saying, because it's my marriage and I'm talking about Song of Solomon, I'll put my marriage out there. I'm not saying it's perfect at all, but one of the things that we try to do is at least a few times a year, sit down at our date night and renew our commitment. Like, talk about why we're committed to each other, what that commitment means, where we're going. What is this partnership that we have? And kind of begin to just reflect on where we've come and why we're still together. And that becomes something that's pretty emotionally connecting for us. And so I would say, if you're married, spend some time saying, why are we still doing this after, you know, for us 14 years? You know, what's the commitment? What's the mission? Where are we going? Talk about it. It'll be transformative. Okay, if we go back to the premise that a marriage is a place that we see how the church and Jesus are supposed to interact, let me work our way backwards. For all of us, what is your commitment to Jesus? Where are you in that? One of the assignments that I would like ask you to do this week is just to sit down and say, God, here's my level of commitment to you. Either one, I'm struggling and I'm not sure you're God and I'm trying to figure that out. Two, I've had a long commitment to you and I want to renew it. Not because I think it's going to, you know, it's a better thing to renew. It's just renewing your commitment is a good practice. And it connects you to Jesus. One step backwards. What are the foxes in the relationship with Jesus that you have as an individual? What are the things that God is saying to you? Jesus is saying, you know, Eric, you need to deal with this. What is God saying to you through Jesus? You need to deal with this issue in your life. You need to deal with your anger. You need to deal with your pornography issue. You need to deal with just the way you treat people, the words that you use. What is it that God is saying to you? So assignment number two is just to say, to identify some of the foxes, some of the character issues in your life that God's asking you to deal with. I want to jump back to the beginning, and I want you to hear what Jesus is saying to this guy. Jesus is saying that you are all pretty nice-looking mares, right? And what he's saying is that you, as his people, are exquisite and that he loves to take care of you. He loves you. And in some ways what he's saying is when he engages you and you engage him, you are more exquisite than all the other people, until he's talking to the other person. But the reality is what he's saying is, I love you. And when you hear that, the question then becomes, is your response like this woman? Do you get lost in Jesus? Do you get lost in the wow factor of Jesus? Now, you can't just make that happen. But what I would be like you to think about this week and just kind of reflect as you're reflecting on the foxes, you're reflecting on the commitment to Jesus, that you reflect on, is there a wowness about my relationship with Jesus? Well, let me tell you this story. I love our Pentecostal brothers and sisters. They make me uncomfortable, but I like them. And I went this last night to the church that's taken over Bethel, where we used to meet. I went to their alternative service. Now, what I really liked about them is they're really intensely like Pentecostal people that we would be like a little uncomfortable, trying really hard not to be those Pentecostal people. And that really, it was a really fun service. But let me tell you, they got some emotion. Like, I was pretty sure they were excited to be there. And now, they did this one funny thing that was kind of nerve-wracking. Was they popped all the lights up, and then all the poor new people had to stand up and say they were new. And then all these people came over and, like, handed them things. And that was a little uncomfortable. But you know what? There's something about our Pentecostal brothers and sisters and their relationship to Jesus that you and I need to stop for a moment and pause and take heed of. Because it's passionate and it's just slightly sexual. Okay, sometimes it's a little too sexual, but in what they say and how they do it. But you know what? There's something about it that we need to take heed of and say, do I have that excitement and that passion and that, like, let's lose a little bit of control over Jesus ever when I get to church and go, woohoo! Oh, gosh, did I say that out loud? Right? I think the Song of Solomon, if anything, it's saying, hey, relationships here, here's how we need to do relationships and all that kind of stuff. But I think what the Song of Solomon is saying to the village is, let's just let go just a little bit, guys. Just a little, you know? Let's kind of contemplate just a little bit what it might be like to, together as a church, be a little bit excited about Jesus. And I'm not saying, because, you know what? I like sitting in exciting places where everyone's jumping up and down quietly with my arms crossed saying, like, I'm experiencing God. And I truly actually am. And I'm a more contemplative person. And I even like just sitting and staring at my wife for hours. So I get the quietness part of us. But there's also a, hey, we just need to let go a little bit. I think, so I would ask you this week is to ask yourself, is God calling me to let go a little bit in my relationship with Him? Is He asking me to be a little bit more excited, a little bit jumpy up and down and woo-hoo-y about Him in public? So, someone give me a time. 6:09. I have 6 minutes. Anybody have questions? Or just thoughts or whatever? Just want to holler out anything they think? Yes, sir. I totally agree with you. And we all churches and all denominations are like personality types. They have their flaws and they have their, you know, benefits. And definitely that's one of those things that you have to be slightly wary of. Any other comments, questions, thoughts?
Yeah, singles. Some of the boxes that singles face.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as I would say, I mean, what I believe foxes simply are just relational issues in our life that we kind of have just let go. So we let the fox run and go do what he wants to do. So if let's just use one that a lot of single men struggle with, pornography, we're just kind of let it go. We're like, we're not even going to put a handle on this. We're not going to wrestle with it. We're not going to bring it into the light. And so what it does is it begins to impact our relationships with other women, the way we see women, with our friends, how we treat our brothers, like just our whole view of life. So that would be, I think they're character things. And so I would really suggest if you're single to say, hey, God, what is it that you're trying to change in me to make me a better future husband or just be a better brother in Christ to the women and men? Any other questions? So they like bite into your skin and don't let go, and you're constantly like flinging your arm up and down.
A lot of times we're not aware of them, but other people are.
Well, Well, then maybe, and if you're single, like, it might be good to just go to a couple of your guy friends and say, hey, what do you see in my life? What is it that I don't see that I need to work on, I need to deal with? Get in a pilgrim group, get in a Bible study, you know, whatever Bible study you're in, and say, hey, here I am. Be nice, but tell me my foxes. Anybody else? One more question. No, James.
I wonder if you could elaborate on chapter 2, verse 3. It says, and this fruit is sweet to my taste. Is that something that we might take literally or figuratively?
Now, let me just say that partly because the purple couch contains some men under 15. I'm not going to say anything about what that says. But if you want to talk to me after that about that, I'd be glad to tell you what I think. So let's pray. Dear God, I want to thank you for James and that he's going to be 45. And he's wise and mature. And I love him. Lord, I just want to pray for my community. I love them. I just ask that you would bless our relationships, that you would challenge us in our relationship with you by this romance, and that we would just enjoy one another in our different relationships, marriage, brothers and sisters. And this would be a community that really treasures one another, protects one another, and offers that to the world around us. So I ask that in your name, Jesus. Amen. All right, so a couple ways to respond. First way is through communion. On the night that Jesus was betrayed, he's eating Passover, he took the bread, he broke it, and he said, this is my body, broken for you. Take, eat, in remembrance of me. At the end of that meal, before Jesus was going up to the cross to be betrayed, go up to the cross, die for us, he took a glass of wine and he held it up and he said, this is my blood, the blood of the new covenant, the blood that forgives your sins. Take and drink in remembrance of me. This is something that we do every Sunday, and it's because it's a place where we give thanks for the ultimate sacrifice of God for our sins. And so if you can come up here, stand with his broken body and his blood poured out for you, please do. Remember, be thankful, be excited about what God has done for you. The other way to respond is through giving. If you're visiting with us, we'd be happy to, if you want to give, you can. If you don't want to give, that's great. It's okay with us. We're just happy to have you. If you would, just the last person put it underneath their seat, that would be awesome. Thanks. The sinner's chair is over there. If you need to be prayed for, because you've got sin issues you need to deal with, or sin, people sinned against you and you just need prayer, please just sit in there and someone will pray for you.